It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil and Wes are in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
And Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you.
Merry
Christmas and happy holidays to all our listeners. And this is the last program of 2015.
Okay. All right. So what are we talking about today?
Wes, you take it from here.
Sure. We're going to talk about the progression of small claims court. Over the past couple of weeks, we've talked about fiduciary-related issues.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to change gears today and talk about a little bit of a light topic for us attorneys, and we'll try to keep it light. But the progression of small claims court in North Carolina, we get a lot of questions about that because certainly the small claims court, or also known as the magistrate court, is really set up for folks to be able to represent themselves in certain type of situations, hopefully to get a quick remedy.
Sure.
And, a lot of the things that I deal with and we deal with at Harvell and Collins that are litigation related is so frustrating, mainly for our clients, because of the time it takes to get through the litigation process.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of used to it. We're used to the process. We're used to the 60-day waiting periods for this and the 30 days for that and the mm-hmm. 45 for this. But the small claims court really is designed to move things pretty quickly. The rules of evidence are very much relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
It's an opportunity for folks to come in and have their dispute heard by someone who has not necessarily is an attorney. Some of our magistrates here are attorneys and some are not, but someone who has legal training with regard to, making a determination as to their dispute.
Right.
And hopefully bringing it to resolution. The jurisdictional amount limit with regard to small claims court, when I started practicing, was 3,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went to 5, and then it's been probably 10 for about a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really moved up a lot, in the past 15 or so years. So small claims court is seeing, more cases now,
mm-hmm.
I think, because of that jurisdictional limit, being much higher.
Sure. I guess it may still be dominated, but for a long time it was dominated by claims about renters and landlords.
Right. Original jurisdiction for landlord-tenant, residential landlord-tenant type cases,
mm-hmm.
It does lie with the magistrate court. And the idea there is that, if we have a situation involving a tenant who is not paying their rent, who is in breach of the lease for some other reason or for not paying rent, then there's a very strong policy in the law that we're wanting to get the highest and best use for real property. So
mm-hmm.
the idea is let's send it to small claims court and get a very quick resolution. Because normally when we file an action or when an action is filed in small claims court, you get a hearing within, say, 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty quick situation. So just to back up a little bit, how does this process begin? I mean, for someone out there listening who has a claim, they have an issue, could be a landlord-tenant issue, could be a breach of contract issue,
mm-hmm.
could be any kind of, civil issue that they think that they want to deal with in court.
Repair work not done.
It could be, let's say someone has done repair work and not been paid for it.
Right.
It could the shoe could be on either foot there. But then you may start that process by simply going to the clerk of court's office
mm-hmm.
In the county in which the defendant resides. That's one thing that is unique to small claims court is you have to bring your action in the county in which that defendant's located.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had certainly cases before where, there was an incident that took place here mm-hmm. where the defendant lives here and the plaintiff is all somewhere else.
Right.
Well, that plaintiff can't make that defendant go to Wake County.
Right.
Or go to, any other county. That plaintiff has to come here and deal with that issue.
Mm-hmm. Can the plaintiff be represented and not does the plaintiff have to appear or can they be represented by counsel?
Well that kind of gets to the point of what evidence are you going to put on in order to support your claim. So mm-hmm. normally you're going to want the plaintiff to be there.
Right.
But in certain circumstances, you may be able to put on your evidence through an affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably would need an attorney if you're going to try to do that.
Right.
So,
right.
Because you would run into really some evidentiary sure. issues if you have a magistrate who gets wise to some of the evidentiary issues, or if it's brought up on the other side, an objection mm-hmm. to the affidavit because, you know, I need to confront this witness,
yes.
that type thing.
Yeah. All right. So, again, we're talking about up to $10,000.
Right.
And it can go there. Now, if your complaint is, say, against a business, do you have to find an individual and have to figure out how that business is owned?
Well, if it's against the business and only the business, then if it's incorporated or LLC, then you can go on the Secretary of State website
mm-hmm.
and do a name search and get all of the information by just kind of following the prompts there
mm-hmm.
regarding the articles of incorporation or articles of organization. You can get the registered agent, you know, so on and so forth, and get all that information, see where their registered office is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, really there's a case in North Carolina that indicates that in our courts, you really can't have an LLC or a corporation represent itself by an agent. You have to really have legal counsel.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't deter, that shouldn't be a deterrent for a plaintiff filing a lawsuit against a corporate defendant.
Right.
It's just that corporate defendant is then going to have to lawyer up
mm-hmm.
or the case isn't going to get dealt with.
Right.
So that's that issue. But at any rate, you know, you go to the clerk of court, you can fill out your complaint in your own handwriting. I mean, very simple situation. The service is taken care of as far as getting the defendant served, is taken care of through the clerk of court's office.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get a notice of hearing, then you have your hearing. And it really is kind of like, you know, Judge Judy or, you know,
right,
one of
right.
these small claims court type things.
The people's
things,
court. The Judge people's Wapner's court.
Right, that yeah. you see on TV.
Now, does it get resolved that quickly?
Easily? Well, you're going to have your hearing at that point in time, and usually the court is going to make a determination
mm-hmm.
at the hearing
mm-hmm.
and report the determination. And then you have a 10-day right to appeal.
Right.
Either party, plaintiff or defendant, has a right to get to a de novo appeal,
mm-hmm.
which de novo means we start anew.
Right.
And that means that basically whatever happened in small claims court
doesn't
is
count.
Nullified.
Right.
You can just go forward with the appeal. But in order to file your appeal and perfect your appeal properly, you have to file a notice of appeal, and you also have to pay the court cost.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't pay the court cost, then that's not a proper appeal, and
then yes.
you are stuck with what
right.
happened.
Right.
And the court would advise you as to what those are, the court calls.
Okay, well, say in small claims court, then you do get a judgment. Mm-hmm. How do you collect on that?
Well, hopefully, you know, the defendant would be willing to pay or make payments on mm-hmm. it if they're concerned about it. Now, that probably only happens, mm-hmm. I would say, less than half the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because a judgment is just a piece of paper that says this person owes me some money. Now, it does act as a lien on real property.
Mm-hmm.
And it does go on a public record, and it does affect credit. You know, credit agencies pick these things up. So, you know, there is certainly a reason the defendant will want to get that judgment taken care of. Also, interest accrues at 8% on that judgment. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, after a period of time, that $5,000 judgment is going
right.
to be a $10,000 judgment, you know, after however many years that would be. Doing the math. But as far as collections goes, you know, if you get your judgment and you really want to be aggressive with your collections, you probably do need legal counsel
mm-hmm.
to help you with that
mm-hmm.
because you then go through a process of getting a writ of possession or a writ of execution, depending on the circumstances,
right?
Put in place. The defendant would have a right to claim exemptions where
mm-hmm.
they can exempt certain property in the event they're an individual defendant. They do. If they're a corporate
mm-hmm.
defendant, they don't. And then assets can be taken from the defendant
mm-hmm.
in order to satisfy the judgment. They can be taken, they can be sold, and you know the proceeds go to the judgment holder.
Again, this is all stemming from what we again, often called the People's Court, the Small Claims Court, and we'll have more on that coming up in just a moment here with Harvell and Collins. If you'd like to call in with a question, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Thanks for joining us here today. And we're joined by Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins, Attorneys of Law, and Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning. And so we're talking about small claims court.
Ben, one comment that I would make is that, you know, this procedure of a listener being able to go to small claims court, fill out their own forms with some minimal guidance from the clerks. Our clerks are helpful. You know, they want to be helpful. They aren't lawyers. They aren't able to give legal advice, but they, of course, you know, will help you through a lot of things. Now, the good thing about this process is that it many times serves as a kind of a discovery process. It's kind of a place to kind of flesh out the facts and kind of see what, if anything, is going to come of this. I mean, quite frankly, you know, even if you're owed $12,000 or $15,000, you know, there's a possibility that that once you file something,
yes,
and you really get serious about asserting your conflict, that who knows, but that the defendant will not, you know, settle for some amount that is appropriate and acceptable. Again, it's an opportunity to kind of get the lay of the land, knowing full well that really at any point during the filing or even after a decision, with the appeal being de novo or all fresh and new, you have the right to then, you know, bring in a lawyer. And so we have files quite frequently where, you know, folks will come by, we'll say, well, you know, we'll get involved if you'd like for us to right now. But maybe you want to try the small claims magistrate court, see what happens, see how the facts kind of fall, and then, you know, we can get involved, you know, at a later time. This is a very busy place, as one would expect. And that is good. This is, I think, the purpose of us bringing this to the attention of our listeners is to let them know, you know, we're very proud of our court system and we're very happy about the fact that there is a place now where, pretty legitimate disputes can be handled without lawyers. And, this is good. I mean, if the jurisdictional limitation had stayed at 25, 35, 4,000, 5,000, it wouldn't be as beneficial to the general public. But with it going up as high as it now has gone, again, one see that doesn't mean that you can't file a case that's worth 15. You're just going to be able to recover 10.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
So kind of walking through the process, of course, as we talked about, you know, you have a right to file a notice of appeal within 10 days. So, you know, that kind of begs the question, you know, when would a litigant really want to have an attorney at this first stage? And, you know, my recommendation with regard to that, if it's if it's just money owed, you probably want to just handle it yourself. But it depends on the circumstances. It really does. Depends on whether the party's coming from out of town, whether we think the other party's going to have an attorney there as well.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of issues there, but we do have that right to do over. But in the event that there is a landlord-tenant issue, that's a little bit different, because if we're trying to get possession of the property, it's very important that we win at the magistrate court level and not have to start this over. And the reason why is because if we get possession through the magistrate court, then an appeal, certainly the defendant can appeal, but they have to, if they want to maintain possession of the property through an appeal, they have to pay their rent as a posting, as a bond, undertaking, to the clerk. So during the pendency of the appeal, they're having to pay the rent. If they breach that obligation to pay the rent, then their appeal goes away.
Yeah.
So we don't want to lose if we're a landlord on the front end at small claims court, because maybe the defendant has an attorney and you don't have an attorney. And then here we are through the pendency of their appeal. The person is maintaining possession, the tenant, and not really having to pay the rent. Hmm. You know, so that would be certainly a reason why we would want to, you know, have legal counsel there at the front end.
So, and again, in a landlord tenant dispute, I mean, if you get them paying the rent, then isn't that what you were after to begin with?
Usually, I mean, there could be other kind of breaches. Yeah. I mean, there could be, you know, misuse of the property, damage. You know, there could be, you know, we represent a good number of these mobile home parks,
right,
RV parks, mm-hmm, where they have this issue going on a lot, and sometimes they have a situation with certain tenants who are being disruptive, let's mm-hmm say, on the weekends.
Sure.
And the other tenants are not happy about it, so there's pressure put on the landlord. And, you know, so there could be multiple issues there that we deal with, you know, on that.
Mm-hmm.
But just in general, the right to appeal, that is then an appeal from the small claims court to district court.
Right.
Now, district court is our entry level with regard to civil disputes in North Carolina. Cases that are appealed from small claims court to district court are selected for arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cases then within, let's say, about a month of the decision from the small claims court, without a month, maybe 2 months, go before an arbitrator, where this is yet another, you know, quasi trial,
mm-hmm,
where the parties are putting on evidence and the arbitrator is making a decision.
Is that binding?
It's not. You have a right to appeal that as well, mm-hmm, within 30 days. Okay. So, however,
is that also a de novo appeal?
It's a de novo appeal. Absolutely. Then we get to district court.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where the rubber hits the road, so to speak, because at district court, you know, you've got an actual district court judge.
Mm-hmm.
You're in one of our courtrooms. Many times, if the case has gotten to this point, the parties do get attorneys. Jurisdictional level has gone up to $25,000. So even if it was this,
because it's de novo, you start over. And,
that's right. Yeah. Even if it was one of these $15,000 cases that you knew you can only get 10 for, and you decided to start in small claims court, once you're in district court, you've got that jurisdictional limit of 25.
And you also attaching attorney's fees. And
well, you've got potentially attorney's fees if there are lawyers involved, and
yeah,
so on and so forth. So then the case does slow down, though, mm-hmm, in district court, because you have to then get on the civil docket. And it takes a little time for your case to come up for trial.
And I know often you guys have talked about how in cases you start with a funnel of facts and you come down eventually. And I just wonder if that also is true here. We'll get to that in just a moment. Take a break and come back here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal, talking about small claims court and about the process and going into district court, et cetera, and arbitration. I just wondered if from the original small claims court, even though it's de novo,
right,
do both sides sort of filter the facts through, and you get to when you're in arbitration, you may know, you know a little bit more.
Well,
now,
you definitely,
right,
know a little bit more. I mean, like Cecil said, it's kind of, you know, informal discovery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hear a little bit more about what the other party is complaining about.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
what documents they have.
Right.
Photographs, maybe
evidence,
expert
exactly
opinions,
right,
you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, at the small claims court level, you know, a lot of times these hearings, my goodness, you just hear everything. You know,
yeah,
arbitration is not a whole lot better.
Yeah.
It's just a whole lot of stuff, this evidence that's not relevant. You know, it really should not come in and be considered.
Well, and again, you know, because it's de novo, it could be all new evidence too, right?
Absolutely. That's what de novo means. I mean, you start new. It doesn't matter. You're not appealing from what happened before. You're appealing brand new,
mm-hmm,
so you can start over. But then when you get the district court level, I mean, things do get funneled down, because
mm-hmm,
if there, you know, there's evidence that maybe came in at the first couple levels, being small claims court and then arbitration, it just would be totally irrelevant. Then the district court judge usually is going to start to parse that down, and mm-hmm. and we're going to deal with whatever the true issues are in the particular case.
Right.
Also, when you get to district court, a lot of times.
I imagine there's a lot of personalities involved, and it's just a small claim size.
Oh, so. You hear all kinds of stuff. Yeah. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Also, when you get to district court, and many times there's a repleting of the facts, because you understand that once you start small claims court, this could be just a very simple complaint that gets filed that says he owes me money on a contract, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. And then that doesn't really change when you go into arbitration. We're still proceeding on this one complaint. But then when you get to district court, you know, usually you're going to want to see more about what are your actual allegations here.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be a counterclaim. We want to raise defenses to your, it could be barred by the statute of limitations.
Right.
It could be barred by statute of frauds. It could be, you know, subject to a 12B6 motion, which is a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. I mean, it could be a lot of things. See, we're getting into the legal jargon
into
now.
Into the weeds a little bit.
I hadn't gotten
more.
To this yet. Now, right. all of a sudden, we're in district court, and there's all these things that we bring up.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask for a jury at that mm-hmm. point in time.
Right.
There's no opportunity for a jury at small claims court or with arbitration. You get to district court, you would have that opportunity.
But again, if you want to find out more about how to proceed with your case, you want to call on the folks at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law at 252-726-9050. Guys, have a Merry Christmas. We'll see you
at
the beginning of the year. See you next year.